Signor, but his nose said, "Hey, freshest scent ever." Following his nose, Jim found a man pouring a bottle of Gain Scentbeads into the washer. The scent, the freshness. Jim blurted, "Sir, your scent maraca smell amazing." "Actually, Jim, most noses call them Gain Scentbeads. Try Gain Scentbeads, way fresher than detergent alone."
Between all the holiday parties,
weekend tailgates,
and family get-togethers,
we've been overindulging a little more than usual over the holidays. But now, we are starting the new year off on a healthier note by taking Active Liver supplements from New Nordic every day.
Active Liver contains a powerful blend of turmeric, milk thistle, and globe artichoke extract, all natural ingredients that help protect the liver so that it can protect you from toxins. It's like giving my body a daily detox. I've never felt better, and my energy is through the roof.
And my doctor is already impressed with how much better my numbers are looking. So if better health, more energy, and detoxing your body are some of your priorities this year, get Active Liver today and start the year off knowing you're giving your liver some well-deserved relief.
Active Liver is available in both tablets and as a delicious gummy. You can find Active Liver in stores at your local CVS or online at Amazon or NewNordicUSA.com.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Recent research shows that people who are middle-class millionaires think differently in 10 distinct ways. And here to talk about this is our guest, Steve Burns. He's founder of New Trader University. He's an investor, a trader, and an educator. Steve, most millionaires still feel middle-class. That's the first difference that these middle-class millionaires have. Is this a mindset thing, the way they think about themselves?
I think it's a combination of a mindset where when we're a middle-class millionaire, we just feel like that's what we need. That's what we should have, and it's more average of what we should have. And also inflation, you know, the cost of homes and cars and the cost of living now doesn't make $1 million feel like as much as it used to feel in past decades.
Yeah, I see photos of million-dollar houses now, and they look very middle-class looking. The next one is the power of strategic financial planning. So I guess that's about thinking ahead, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference I've seen in my own study of middle-class millionaires is they start with a purpose, whether it's their career, whether it's their investment account or their savings. They start with goals and they plan to be millionaires. And I looked at compounding growth tables as a teenager, and I even mapped out how long it would take me myself to be a millionaire based on a certain set of returns. A lot of them all say, majority of them say that the financial planning got them to where they are. It didn't happen by accident.
And part of that, I would assume, is regularly reviewing your progress and making course corrections.
Yeah, that's another trait of the middle-class millionaires is they do adjust. You know, things don't work out. A job may not work out, a career. They might need more education to do what they want to do. They may decide to start a business at some point instead of being an employee. And I think that people that do become millionaires do pivot as time goes on. They react to their circumstances. They don't become victims. They have a growth mindset to always come out of their circumstances better.
Number three, you have how hard work beats luck in building wealth. So don't count on a lottery ticket to make you wealthy. It's really hard work.
Yeah, most middle-class millionaires either have high-powered six-figure careers or they have their own businesses. And very, very few of them do any gambling or play any lottery tickets unless it's just for entertainment. They take their finances very seriously, and they're not looking to be gamblers. They're looking to build value that creates wealth for them.
Our guest is Steve Burns, founder of New Trader University, and we're talking about ways that people who are middle-class millionaires think differently. And number four on the list is security matters more than luxury. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think the goal for me and so many middle-class millionaires is money equals freedom. Money doesn't equal the ability to have a huge house or a brand new car or to go on lavish vacations. We really value money for the freedom it gives us to choose when we wake up in the morning, to choose what we do all day, to choose the kind of work we do that we enjoy. And for most middle-class millionaires, even if they do have careers, they like the freedom that their money allows them to do what they want to do. They can change careers. They can retire early. They can have side businesses that they enjoy. So really, they look at money more as a tool for freedom than they do for just something to quickly buy something with.
Number five on the list is family-first financial philosophy. What's that all about?
Yet so many of the middle class millionaires that I even know personally is they usually are married with children, and they worked hard to create their wealth, or they stayed disciplined for the sake of their family's well-being and to build a legacy for themselves and to give their families a good life. And that's more of a driver when they have a family to look after to motivate them and to keep them on the straight and narrow for wealth building versus someone who is just doing it for themselves or single. A lot of times do not have the same motivation to build a financial legacy.
Let's jump over to this one, Breaking Free, the Self-Made Success Story. And this is about what? Is this taking risks?
The ability to take risks. You know, if you do have $100,000 in your investment account, you can invest more aggressively and take some growth stocks individually and do more aggressive things than you could if you did not have an investment account or you didn't have a cushion. You know, an emergency fund allows a middle-class millionaire to go start their own business because they have a buffer between their paychecks. You know, too many of the regular middle class lives paycheck to paycheck with little saved, while middle-class millionaires do have a buffer to either take speculative investments with their capital or to switch jobs or to advance their career, take risks, move to somewhere they've always wanted to live, or to launch out as an entrepreneur and leave the rat race completely. So I think it's an opportunity value.
Steve, the next one would be surprising frugality, living below their means. I guess you develop a habit of watching your pennies as you're rising up to the wealthy level, and then you stay that way. You still are very careful about what you spend your money on.
That's what's so fascinating, that the frugal mindset and lifestyle is something that they always have. What's really crazy, Warren Buffett is the most famous for that, as one of the richest people in the world. He still has absurd frugality. The two quick Warren Buffett stories is he tried to use a coupon at McDonald's when going to lunch with Bill Gates. Bill Gates talked about that in one of his shareholder letters where he laughed at Warren Buffett. They're both, you know, some of the richest people in the world, and Warren Buffett's literally trying to use a McDonald's coupon to save money. And the other quick story, I think it was in his biography, The Snowball, Warren Buffett was with Catherine Graham, the owner of, I think it was the Washington Post, where they had to make a phone call through a payphone back then. It was a dime. He put in a quarter, and the change came out, and Catherine Graham wanted to hurry up and leave, and he wanted to get his 15 cents back out of the change in the payphone. And she thought, I think we'll survive, Warren, without the 15 cents.
That's wild. The freedom-focused money mindset. I guess we have touched on that, but maybe we could talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, a lot of the work I did early in my life to retire young is everything I did was to retire. You know, when I started working, I wasn't thinking, I want to work and retire at 65 or 70 and go on Social Security. You know, I started with the fact that I want to retire as fast as I can with enough money to do what I want to do the rest of my life. So I sort of started with the end in mind when I started working, and that was everything I did was to service the goal of being financially independent, not owning lavish things.
That's great. In looking at this research, it says many middle-class millionaires believe they need up to $3 million for a comfortable retirement. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. With the rate of inflation and the cost of living, I mean, what the returns for the stock market going forward after the run it's had over the last decade, yeah, I do agree. $3 million would be a comfortable retirement. It used to be a lot less, but, you know, some of these mortgage payments have doubled, tripled over the last 15, 20 years. So I do believe $3 million is the new number.
Steve, how do the middle-class millionaires view the ultra-wealthy, the people we were just talking about, Warren Buffett, there are many others. How do they view those people? Do they admire them, look up to them, or don't they even think about them?
I think they do model them. They learn, especially Warren Buffett, so many middle-class millionaires, some of their hobbies is reading financial books, investing books, and even studying some of the top millionaires and billionaire entrepreneurs. So I think they look up to them, and they never believe they're in the same league as the ultra-wealthy, as the ultra-wealthy can do whatever they want to do. The millionaire middle class has enough to do whatever they want to do in a normal lifestyle. It's a very big contrast.
It seems like the one thing that's constant in the financial world is change. You know, you could be riding high on a stock and the next day it crashes. Do you have any advice or thoughts on the fact of riding out those ups and downs and not getting distracted?
Yeah, I think the key is when you start whatever investment strategy or financial independence strategy is to just have a quantified process with an edge. You know, that could be, you know, if you're going to invest in buy and hold, it needs to be over at least 10 or 15 year periods in the S&P 500. But you really have to know what you're doing. The .com taught me a lot of people a lot of lessons about investments with the .com, where you have to have you know, diversification properly, and have to have exit strategies to lock in outside gains, even if it's just rotating portfolios more into bonds or cash to keep your profits. So yeah, I think you have to stay flexible to what's going on at the current moment, but you have to start with a quantified process with an edge that's been proven historically.
Well, as we wrap this up, do you have any words of encouragement for those who want to be a middle-class millionaire?
Yeah, if you can set the goals that you're passionate about achieving and you have a plan to get there, as long as you don't give up, you know, only time separates you from your financial goals.
Steve Burns, founder of New Trader University. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Okay, I have to tell you, I was just looking on eBay where I go for all kinds of things I love, and there it was.
That hologram trading card. One of the rarest, the last one I needed for my set. Shiny like the
designer handbag of my dreams. One of a kind. eBay had it, and now everyone's asking, ooh, where'd you get your
windshield wipers? eBay has all the parts that fit my car. No more annoying. Just beautiful.
Whatever you love, find it on eBay. eBay. Things people love.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance specialist for university housing, he knows college students can major in wear and tear. Plus, housing so many students doesn't leave a lot of room to house all the supplies he needs. That's where Grainger comes in. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast, dependable delivery, Grainger carries the quality products he needs so he doesn't have to. From a new door hinge to a whole new faucet. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Parents, do you find it difficult to convince your teens to eat healthy foods? The answer may be simpler than you think. InfoTrack reporter Roy Mackey has the story. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. We're speaking with Syra Sarwar from the Department of Psychology at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Syra, you were the lead author of a study that sheds light on the powerful influences of the home food environment on adolescent eating habits. Before we get to your findings, just tell us what that means exactly, the home food environment.
Yeah, so in our study, we measured the availability of fruits and vegetables and the availability of fats in sweet foods in the home.
All right. Well, tell us some of the highlights of your study and what specific aspects of the home food environment you examined.
Yeah, so we found that home fruit and vegetable availability was associated with greater diet quality, as well as greater intake of fruits and vegetables, so kind of what we would expect. But we also saw that fruit and vegetable availability in the home was associated with less intake of fast food. So that was kind of, we thought, really cool. And then we also saw that home fat and sweet availability was associated with greater intake of nutrient-poor foods. So kind of those foods you would expect to be associated with fats and sweets, like sugary drinks and sugary foods as well.
You also looked at the neighborhood environment. What did you find there?
We found comparatively fewer associations between the neighborhood food environment and adolescent diet. That was a little bit surprising for us, but we did see that greater fast food counts in the neighborhood environment around each adolescent's home was uniquely associated with greater sugary beverage intake, and also greater convenience store counts around the adolescent's home was associated with greater beneficial food consumption. That was actually an unexpected finding for us, and that could also point to the fact that certain food retailers, like fast food retailers and convenience store retailers, may not be always unhealthy, right? So they might offer accessible, healthier food options. So that's one thing that was unexpected and I think pretty interesting in our study.
I saw a recent study that found that two-thirds of the diet of the average teen in the UK consisted of ultra-processed foods, which probably isn't any better in the US. What are the health concerns for teenagers and their diets, and does that follow them into adulthood?
Yeah, so we see that adolescent dietary behaviors tend to track into adulthood. So adolescence is a pretty important time for solidifying and creating healthy habits. We also see that diet is linked to a whole host of negative health consequences, leading public health concerns like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, and things like that. So yeah, that's a major concern.
I think the challenge for parents is if they buy a bag of apples and a bag of Cheetos for their kids, you pretty much know what will still be there at the end of the week. Isn't that just normal behavior for teenagers?
Well, I think that teenagers are inclined to eat more of those junk foods and more of those less healthful foods. We actually see in the transition from childhood to adolescence, there's an increase in fast food intake and actually a simultaneous decrease in fruit and vegetable intake. However, I think this study points to the fact that parents can help the adolescents make healthier food options by increasing their fruit and vegetable availability in the home and also decreasing the availability of those less healthful food options, so like chips and snack foods and things like that.
I'm not sure if your study addressed this, but do you have any general thoughts regarding, say, meal preparation practices or family eating habits and how that may play into all this?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. You're right that our study didn't necessarily look at this area, but there is some evidence in the literature that getting teenagers involved in the food prep process, you know, getting them to help with the preparation, deciding on which meals you're going to eat together, that kind of creates this buy-in where they're more likely to eat those healthier food options. So there is evidence that that is a beneficial way to get them involved and also promote the healthier food intake.
Just as a final thought, can you maybe give some practical tips for parents looking to improve their home food environment and to get their teens on board with the idea?
You know, our study really emphasizes the value of the home food environment in particular. So our study was a little bit of a interesting finding that even though adolescents do have greater autonomy to access things like the neighborhood food environment, it actually seems like, at least from our study, the home food environment shows greater association with diet. So we suggest that parents and families really harness the value of the home food environment, in particular fruit and vegetable availability, to kind of improve their adolescents' overall diet quality and also overall dietary habits.
Syra Sarwar from the Department of Psychology at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
And that wraps up this week's show. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitty. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll be here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
For many people, it seems like a medical miracle. Several approved medications that help you lose weight, and over 15 million people are using one brand or another. But some experts warn of potential side effects and risks. We'll have the story.
Patients and providers need to A, be aware of these side effects. And when patients are experiencing any of these problems, you know, feeling dizzy, about to faint, communicate with their providers.
Then, that middle-class neighbor of yours might be a millionaire, but you'd never guess it from their frugal lifestyle.
Middle-class millionaires start with a purpose, whether it's their career, whether it's their investment account, or their savings. They start with goals, and they plan to be millionaires.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. Stay with us. InfoTrack begins right after this.
Okay, I have to tell you. I was just looking on eBay, where I go for all kinds of things I love, and there it was.
That hologram trading card. One of the rarest, the last one I needed for my set. Shiny like the
designer handbag of my dreams. One of a kind. eBay had it, and now everyone's asking, ooh, where'd you get your
windshield wipers? eBay has all the parts that fit my car. No more annoying. Just beautiful.
Whatever you love, find it on eBay. eBay. Things people love.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When it comes to my lifestyle and diet, I don't always make the smartest choices.
Touchdown! Woo! Hey, how about another round and some more chips?
But when it comes to taking care of my liver, I do make one very smart choice. Active Liver Tablets from New Nordic. I used to have real issues with my liver. And at my last checkup, my doc was concerned about my numbers. But since adding a once-a-day active liver tablet, my gut's better, I feel great, and my doctor's happy. I ask a lot of my liver, so the least I can do to say thanks is a daily dose of Active Liver.
You ask a lot of your liver, so give it the support it needs with Active Liver. You can find Active Liver at Amazon.com, or for a volume discount, visit NewNordicUSA.com. Go to New, NordicUSA.com, Amazon, or ask for Active Liver at your local CVS. New year, new you, New Nordic.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Popular weight loss drugs, such as Ozempic and others, can help you shed the pounds, but they also come with possible side effects you need to be aware of. Here with the story, InfoTrack reporter Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, clinical epidemiologist and nephrologist at John J. Cochran Veterans Hospital, which is affiliated with Washington University School of Medicine, both in St. Louis. Doctor, the research team studied more than 2 million people with diabetes taking the drugs, such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, and Zepbound. Now, in addition to weight loss, what benefits did you observe from these drugs?
We studied these new drugs, GLP-1 receptor agonists, commonly marketed under Ozempic or Zepbound and the like. We saw that these drugs reduced the risk of several problems, including substance use disorders. We saw reduced risk of alcohol problems, cannabis use disorders, stimulant use disorders, and opioid use disorder. And this is really a big deal in the U.S. We also saw reduced risk of suicidal ideation and schizophrenia and psychotic disorders. To our surprise, we also saw that some patients benefited from this by reducing the risk of memory problems and memory loss in situations like Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And we also saw reduced risk of clotting problems, risk of infections, fatty liver disease, and liver cancer.
Now, in general, can you characterize the reduction for us?
Generally, the reduction that we've seen with this class of medication is modest. And for some disorders, it was about 10%. For some others, about 20%, 25%. That's generally modest. But for situations like Alzheimer's disease, when there are actually now no treatment that really works, having a 10 or 15% reduction in the risk of Alzheimer's disease is really a significant, I think, breakthrough. Because it's beyond this sort of modest reduction, it also is teaching us about the biology of Alzheimer's disease and potentially how can we tweak these medications to even achieve greater efficacy.
Now, with the reduced risk of addiction to opioids, for instance, do you foresee that doctors might prescribe these weight loss drugs to treat opioid addiction?
Yes, and the companies that actually are behind these medications are actually testing these medications now in randomized controlled trials, you know, for treatment of addiction disorders. And actually more commonly now for somebody who's sort of struggling with obesity and has a, you know, very high BMI and has been struggling with obesity when everything has failed, like diet, exercise, and all the like has previously failed. And if this person is also is trying to address their addiction problems, then starting on GLP-1 will help them hit two birds and one stone. On one end, they could actually get rid of that obesity and get some weight loss going. And it also makes it easier for them to kick that alcohol habit or that cannabis habit or that opioid habit and help with that addiction disorder. So certainly the story on GLP-1 is still being written. And it's really exciting that they have a really significant effect, many health benefits beyond just weight loss.
And now the flip side of the coin, what were the risks that you observed?
We saw increased risk of GI problems, gastrointestinal problems, and that's really common. And people have been talking about this for a while, but we also saw it in our studies, including increased risk of nausea, vomiting, and in some cases, diarrhea, constipation, gastroesophageal reflux disease, commonly referred to as heartburn. We also saw increased risk of gastroparesis, that's stomach paralysis. In addition to all of these GI problems, we saw in some individuals that actually were having low blood pressure and so low to the point of leading them to faint or having something we call syncope or fainting. We saw increased risk of sleep problems and headaches and also increased risk of nephrolithiasis or kidney stones. So these patients in some cases were developing kidney stones and also developing kidney inflammation. And in very rare cases, but very important side effect, drug-induced pancreatitis, that's inflammation of the pancreas that can put people in the hospital or even worse, could be fatal.
We're visiting with Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, clinical epidemiologist and nephrologist at Washington University in St. Louis. We're talking about a study now published in the journal Nature on the benefits and risks linked to popular weight loss drugs that we've been hearing so much about. Doctor, can you quantify, once again, some of these risks that you were just discussing?
For every outcome, the magnitude of the risk really differs, but in general, they're also modest risks. We actually see very commonly GI side effects, less so low blood pressure, less so syncope or fainting, and much, much less so kidney inflammation and drug-induced pancreatitis. But in general, the risk is about 10 to 20%.
Now, I think we all know that inflammation can be a major culprit with cancer. So with this increased risk of pancreatitis, is a person potentially more at risk of perhaps developing cancer?
The short answer is that we don't really know. Our study, we evaluated people and followed them for about 3.7 years. That's a little shy of 4 years. What will happen in people who are using this medicine for 5 years or 6 years or 10 years? The short answer is that we don't really know, and more needs to be done to help us actually evaluate questions that you just asked, you know, like, will this sort of inflammation in the pancreas invite chronic pancreatitis or even worse, pancreatic cancer in the future? That remains to be evaluated, remains to be proven empirically in data.
With the downsides, what sorts of monitoring should doctors do of patients taking these weight loss drugs?
I think patients and providers need to, A, be aware of these side effects. And when patients are experiencing any of these problems, you know, feeling dizzy, about to faint, communicate with their providers. Providers should be on the lookout. You know, this is very important for doctors and providers, should be on the lookout for these problems or these side effects in people who are prescribed GLP-1, because early identification is really key to preventing things from getting worse. Nip it in the bud. Identifying it early and nipping it in the bud is always better than letting it go for several months and then have problems later on.
Do the negative effects decrease over time, and might that suggest that patients can adapt to these medicines eventually?
Dose is key, and then the body acclimating to these medicines is also very, very important. So we find generally in the clinic and also in data in the studies that, you know, lower doses are better tolerated than very high doses. Sometimes somebody is on a high dose and experiencing, you know, side effects, you know, scaling it back a little bit may help. And two, these medications need some time for people to acclimate to these medications. So, you know, starting low and with time, you know, some of these, especially the GI side effects, could actually go away and patients could tolerate these medications. But again, it's very hard to generalize. It's very, very important that patients discuss these issues with their providers, because every person is really unique and their situation is unique. And that discussion needs to be had with their primary care provider or the provider who is prescribing these GLP-1 medications.
And doctor, I want to return to something you said before that was most interesting, something about the stomach freezing, perhaps not operating. What is that exactly that you mentioned was a risk?
So the way that these medications work, they actually really slow down the GI tract. But in some individuals, that slowing down is really, really profound to the point that it actually goes all the way from slowing down to a complete halt or paralysis, stomach paralysis. And this goes beyond just like, you know, nausea and vomiting and diarrhea or constipation. It's really a complete stomach paralysis. The good news for people who experience gastroparesis or stomach paralysis is that this is really reversible. Obviously, you know, immediately talk to your doctor, they stop the medication, and usually that reverses upon stopping the medication. But it's a really serious, serious side effect that should not be taken lightly.
Well, wonderful research and a very, very interesting report. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, clinical epidemiologist and nephrologist, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and delighted to be with you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, the secrets of middle-class millionaires. That story as InfoTrack continues.
There's more InfoTrack coming up. Stay tuned. With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you get coverage options based on how much you want to pay for car insurance. And then you decide how to spend the rest of your money, because you're in charge. And right now, you're going to pay for groceries. But you decide what groceries. Just keep in mind you're running out of dishwashing soap. But you decide if you're going to buy that soap. Just those dishes won't clean themselves, will they? Remember, with Progressive's Name Your Price tool, we'll help you find coverage at a fair price. And then, you're in charge. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Again, Sent Bede's story. Jim was at the laundromat when he heard. His ear said, "Maracas, senor," but his nose said, "Hey, freshest scent ever." Following his nose, Jim found a man pouring a bottle of Gain scent beads into the washer. The scent, the freshness. Jim blurted, "Sir, your scent maracas smell amazing." "Actually, Jim, most noses call them Gain scent beads." Try Gain scent beads, way fresher than detergent alone.
Between all the holiday parties,
weekend tailgates,
and family get-togethers,
we've been overindulging a little more than usual over the holidays. But now, we are starting the new year off on a healthier note by taking Active Liver supplements from New Nordic every day.
Active Liver contains a powerful blend of turmeric, milk thistle, and globe artichoke extract, all natural ingredients that help protect the liver so that it can protect you from toxins. It's like giving my body a daily detox. I've never felt better, and my energy is through the roof.
And my doctor is already impressed with how much better my numbers are looking. So if better health, more energy, and detoxing your body are some of your priorities this year, get Active Liver today and start the year off knowing you're giving your liver some well-deserved relief.
Active Liver is available in both tablets and as a delicious gummy. You can find Active Liver in stores at your local CVS or online at Amazon or NewNordicUSA.com.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Recent research shows that people who are middle-class millionaires think differently in 10 distinct ways. And here to talk about this is our guest, Steve Burns. He's founder of New Trader University. He's an investor, a trader, and an educator. Steve, most millionaires still feel middle-class. That's the first difference that these middle-class millionaires have. Is this a mindset thing, the way they think about themselves?
I think it's a combination of a mindset where when we're a middle-class millionaire, we just feel like that's what we need. That's what we should have, and it's more average of what we should have. And also inflation, you know, the cost of homes and cars and the cost of living now doesn't make $1 million feel like as much as it used to feel in past decades.
Yeah, I see photos of million-dollar houses now, and they look very middle-class looking. The next one is the power of strategic financial planning. So I guess that's about thinking ahead, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference I've seen in my own study of middle-class millionaires is they start with a purpose, whether it's their career, whether it's their investment account, or their savings. They start with goals, and they plan to be millionaires. And I looked at compounding growth tables as a teenager, and I even mapped out how long it would take me, myself, to be a millionaire based on a certain set of returns. A lot of them all say, majority of them, say that the financial planning got them to where they are. It didn't happen by accident.
And part of that, I would assume, is regularly reviewing your progress and making course corrections.
Yeah, that's another trait of the middle-class millionaires is they do adjust. You know, things don't work out. A job may not work out, a career. They might need more education to do what they want to do. They may decide to start a business at some point instead of being an employee. And I think that people that do become millionaires do pivot as time goes on. They react to their circumstances. They don't become victims. They have a growth mindset to always come out of their circumstances better.
Number three, you have how hard work beats luck in building wealth. So don't count on a lottery ticket to make you wealthy. It's really hard work.
Yeah, most middle-class millionaires either have high-powered six-figure careers or they have their own businesses. And very, very few of them do any gambling or play any lottery tickets unless it's just for entertainment. They take their finances very seriously, and they're not looking to be gamblers. They're looking to build value that creates wealth for them.
Our guest is Steve Burns, founder of New Trader University, and we're talking about ways that people who are middle-class millionaires think differently. And number four on the list is security matters more than luxury. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think the goal for me and so many middle-class millionaires is money equals freedom. Money doesn't equal the ability to have a huge house or a brand new car or to go on lavish vacations. We really value money for the freedom it gives us to choose when we wake up in the morning, to choose what we do all day, to choose the kind of work we do that we enjoy. And for most middle-class millionaires, even if they do have careers, they like the freedom that their money allows them to do what they want to do. They can change careers. They can retire early. They can have side businesses that they enjoy. So really, they look at money more as a tool for freedom than they do for just something to quickly buy something with.
Number five on the list is family-first financial philosophy. What's that all about?
Yeah, so many of the middle-class millionaires that I even know personally is they usually are married with children, and they worked hard to create their wealth, or they stayed disciplined for the sake of their family's well-being and to build a legacy for themselves and to give their families a good life. And that's more of a driver when they have a family to look after to motivate them and to keep them on the straight and narrow for wealth building versus someone who is just doing it for themselves or single a lot of times, do not have the same motivation to build a financial legacy.
Let's jump over to this one, Breaking Free, the Self-Made Success Story. And this is about what? Is this taking risks?
The ability to take risks. You know, if you do have $100,000 in your investment account, you can invest more aggressively and take some growth stocks individually and do more aggressive things than you could if you did not have an investment account or you didn't have a cushion. You know, an emergency fund allows a middle-class millionaire to go start their own business because they have a buffer between their paychecks. You know, too many of the regular middle class lives paycheck to paycheck with little saved, while middle-class millionaires do have a buffer to either take speculative investments with their capital or to switch jobs, or to advance their career, take risks, move to somewhere they've always wanted to live, or to launch out as an entrepreneur and leave the rat race completely. So I think it's an opportunity value.
Steve, the next one would be surprising frugality, living below their means. I guess you develop a habit of watching your pennies as you're rising up to the wealthy level, and then you stay that way. You still are very careful about what you spend your money on.
That's what's so fascinating, that the frugal mindset and lifestyle is something that they always have. What's really crazy, Warren Buffett is the most famous for that, as one of the richest people in the world. He still has absurd frugality. The two quick Warren Buffett stories is he tried to use a coupon at McDonald's when going to lunch with Bill Gates. Bill Gates talked about that in one of his shareholder letters where he laughed at Warren Buffett. They're both, you know, some of the richest people in the world, and Warren Buffett's literally trying to use a McDonald's coupon to save money. And the other quick story, I think it was in his biography, The Snowball, Warren Buffett was with Catherine Graham, the owner of, I think it was the Washington Post, where they had to make a phone call through a payphone back then. It was a dime. He put in a quarter, and the change came out, and Catherine Graham wanted to hurry up and leave, and he wanted to get his 15 cents back out of the change in the payphone. And she thought, I think we'll survive, Warren, without the 15 cents.
That's wild. The freedom-focused money mindset. I guess we have touched on that, but maybe we could talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, a lot of the work I did early in my life to retire young is everything I did was to retire. You know, when I started working, I wasn't thinking, I want to work and retire at 65 or 70 and go on Social Security. You know, I started with the fact that I want to retire as fast as I can with enough money to do what I want to do the rest of my life. So I sort of started with the end in mind when I started working, and that was everything I did was to service the goal of being financially independent, not owning lavish things.
That's great. In looking at this research, it says many middle-class millionaires believe they need up to $3 million for a comfortable retirement. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. With the rate of inflation and the cost of living, I mean, what the returns for the stock market going forward after the run it's had over the last decade, yeah, I do agree. $3 million would be a comfortable retirement. It used to be a lot less, but, you know, some of these mortgage payments have doubled, tripled over the last 15, 20 years. So I do believe $3 million is the new number.
Steve, how do the middle-class millionaires view the ultra-wealthy, the people we were just talking about, Warren Buffett, there are many others. How do they view those people? Do they admire them, look up to them, or don't they even think about them?
I think they do model them. They learn, especially Warren Buffett, so many middle-class millionaires, some of their hobbies is reading financial books, investing books, and even studying some of the top millionaires and billionaire entrepreneurs. So I think they look up to them, and they never believe they're in the same league as the ultra wealthy, as the ultra wealthy can do whatever they want to do. The millionaire middle class has enough to do whatever they want to do in a normal lifestyle. It's a very big contrast.
It seems like the one thing that's constant in the financial world is change. You know, you could be riding high on a stock and the next day it crashes. Do you have any advice or thoughts on the fact of riding out those ups and downs and not getting distracted?
Yeah, I think the key is when you start whatever investment strategy or financial independence strategy is to just have a quantified process with an edge. You know, that could be, you know, if you're going to invest in buy and hold, it needs to be over at least 10 or 15 year periods in the S&P 500. But you really have to know what you're doing. The .com taught me a lot of people a lot of lessons about investments with the .com, where you have to have you know, diversification properly. You have to have exit strategies to lock in outside gains, even if it's just rotating portfolios more into bonds or cash to keep your profit. So I think you have to stay flexible to what's going on in the current moment, but you have to start with a quantified process with an edge that's been proven historically.
Well, as we wrap this up, do you have any words of encouragement for those who want to be a middle-class millionaire?
Yeah, if you can set the goals that you're passionate about achieving and you have a plan to get there, as long as you don't give up, you know, only time separates you from your financial goals.
Steve Burns, founder of New Trader University. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Okay, I have to tell you, I was just looking on eBay where I go for all kinds of things I love, and there it was.
That hologram trading card. One of the rarest, the last one I needed for my set. Shiny like the
designer handbag of my dreams. One of a kind. eBay had it, and now everyone's asking, ooh, where'd you get your
windshield wipers? eBay has all the parts that fit my car. No more annoying. Just beautiful.
Whatever you love, find it on eBay. eBay. Things people love.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance specialist for university housing, he knows college students can major in wear and tear. Plus, housing so many students doesn't leave a lot of room to house all the supplies he needs. That's where Grainger comes in. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast, dependable delivery, Grainger carries the quality products he needs so he doesn't have to. From a new door hinge to a whole new faucet. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Parents, do you find it difficult to convince your teens to eat healthy foods? The answer may be simpler than you think. InfoTrack reporter Roy Mackey has the story. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. We're speaking with Syra Sarwar from the Department of Psychology at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Syra, you were the lead author of a study that sheds light on the powerful influences of the home food environment on adolescent eating habits. Before we get to your findings, just tell us what that means exactly, the home food environment.
Yeah, so in our study, we measured the availability of fruits and vegetables and the availability of fats in sweet foods in the home.
All right, well, tell us some of the highlights of your study and what specific aspects of the home food environment you examined.
Yeah, so we found that home fruit and vegetable availability was associated with greater diet quality, as well as greater intake of fruits and vegetables, so kind of what we would expect. But we also saw that fruit and vegetable availability in the home was associated with less intake of fast food. So that was kind of, we thought, really cool. And then we also saw that home fat and sweet availability was associated with greater intake of nutrient poor foods. So kind of those foods you would expect to be associated with fats and sweets, like sugary drinks and sugary foods as well.
You also looked at the neighborhood environment. What did you find there?
We found comparatively fewer associations between the neighborhood food environment and adolescent diet. That was a little bit surprising for us, but we did see that greater fast food counts in the neighborhood environment around each adolescent's home was uniquely associated with greater sugary beverage intake, and also greater convenience store counts around the adolescent's home was associated with greater beneficial food consumption. That was actually an unexpected finding for us, and that could also point to the fact that certain food retailers, like fast food retailers and convenience store retailers, may not be always unhealthy, right? So they might offer accessible, healthier food options. So that's one thing that was unexpected and I think pretty interesting in our study.
I saw a recent study that found that two-thirds of the diet of the average teen in the UK consisted of ultra-processed foods, which probably isn't any better in the US. What are the health concerns for teenagers and their diets, and does that follow them into adulthood?
Yeah, so we see that adolescent dietary behaviors tend to track into adulthood. So adolescence is a pretty important time for solidifying and creating healthy habits. We also see that diet is linked to a whole host of negative health consequences, leading public health concerns like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, and things like that. So yeah, that's a major concern.
I think the challenge for parents is if they buy a bag of apples and a bag of Cheetos for their kids, you pretty much know what will still be there at the end of the week. Isn't that just normal behavior for teenagers?
Well, I think that teenagers are inclined to eat more of those junk foods and more of those less healthful foods. We actually see in the transition from childhood to adolescence, there's an increase in fast food intake and actually a simultaneous decrease in fruit and vegetable intake. However, I think this study points to the fact that parents can help the adolescents make healthier food options by increasing their fruit and vegetable availability in the home and also decreasing the availability of those less healthful food options, so like chips and snack foods and things like that.
I'm not sure if your study addressed this, but do you have any general thoughts regarding, say, meal preparation practices or family eating habits and how that may play into all this?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. You're right that our study didn't necessarily look at this area, but there is some evidence in the literature that getting teenagers involved in the food prep process, you know, getting them to help with the preparation, deciding on which meals you're going to eat together, that kind of creates this buy-in where they're more likely to eat those healthier food options. So there is evidence that that is a beneficial way to get them involved and also promote the healthier food intake.
Just as a final thought, can you maybe give some practical tips for parents looking to improve their home food environment and to get their teens on board with the idea?
You know, our study really emphasizes the value of the home food environment in particular. So our study was a little bit of a interesting finding that even though adolescents do have greater autonomy to access things like the neighborhood food environment, it actually seems like, at least from our study, the home food environment shows greater association with diet. So we suggest that parents and families really harness the value of the home food environment, in particular fruit and vegetable availability, to kind of improve their adolescents' overall diet quality and also overall dietary habits.
Syra Sarwar from the Department of Psychology at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
And that wraps up this week's show. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm Chris Witte. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll be here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Stay informed with the latest news throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley on our sister station, 93.5 The Tap. James Kelly and the WCFW News team has what you need to know every hour, 24 hours a day. For the latest news, talk, and discussion on what's important to you, count on 93.5 The Tap and WCFW.FM.
Chippewa Valley weather.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A little light snow will give way to mostly sunny skies with highs of the lower teens, and our winds will be out of the northwest, 5 to 10. Any accumulation of snow well under an inch. For tonight, partly cloudy, the low near 10 below. Currently 8 degrees.
CFW.
Yeah!
90s, and more. 105.7 CFW.
Louder! Ghostbusters!
Chippewa Valley weekends never sounded so good. 80s, 90s, and more all weekend long. 105.7 CFW.
WCFW-FM Chippewa Falls, a Civic Media radio station with the best of the 80s, 90s, and more. 105.7 CFW.
So look here, I put on the back of my